Welcome to another episode of Israel Tech. I'm excited to be here at the Intel Ignite offices at Azrieli in the Triangle Tower. Thank you, Alon Leibovich. Thank you for hosting us.
I'm very happy to have you.
So you're the managing director of Intel Ignite. Let's just jump right in with Intel Ignite. I'm very familiar with you guys, but before I was surprised I'd never really heard of you.
Yeah.
So what exactly does Intel Ignite do, and is there any connection to Intel?
Yeah, so great questions. And first of all, of course, there is a connection to Intel. I'll talk about it in just a few more sentences, but Intel Ignite, let's start with kind of the overall description. So Intel Ignite is the strategic pre-seed and seed vehicle for Intel to engage with startups. We invest $500,000 in kind, meaning goods and services, not cash, in every company. In exchange, we don't take any equity, nor we sit on your cap table. Okay, so these are like a couple of big words that I just kind of threw out there, but we work with early stage startups in the deep tech ecosystem that can be relevant for future proofing Intel. That's what we're interested about.
So what's it, if you guys don't take equity, don't take capital, what do you get out of it?
Yeah, so that's a fantastic question. So Intel's interest is, as I said, future-proofing its, basically future-proofing itself. So that means we want to know of everything that is in deep tech that two people on a deck are working on, okay? Because we want to make sure that Intel stays ahead of the curve. That's the main agenda.
So you get the knowledge, and the information and all of that.
There you go. We get the market.
Do you get access to the IP?
No, we do not. Definitely Chinese walls. Great question, by the way, because people always are like, okay, so am I getting like Intel in too early? That's why we don't take equity, nor we sit on your cap table. We want to make sure that we're not only helping Intel, but we're also helping the startups. The flip side of like helping Intel or what the founders get out of it, it's a founder development program. Like we think about ourselves as a co-founder as a service. We really tell you and help you, like we tell you the stuff that a lot of the other folks have a harder time telling you.
Like what? What is it that you sell that, let's say, your other VCs wouldn't tell?
Yeah. So that's phenomenal. So I was, prior to this, I was a founder CEO of my own company. I'm sure we'll get around to talk about that. But I had a bunch of hard stuff that I couldn't figure out. I didn't know what to do. Let's think about a specific example. Product market fit, it's like voodoo, okay? It's like nobody really knows, like everybody tells you that you gotta get there, but nobody tells you how.
Right.
Or what it is, or am I there yet?
Right.
Okay? So there were a bunch of stuff like that in the startup journey, and we've made it a point, okay, to take all of these like amorphic, intangible, like stuff that really everybody talks about, but nobody really takes it down like a notch to like actual tactics and actual technique and like techniques. So we have a product market fit workshop, okay, on how do you get there? What's a discovery call? Why is it not a sales call? How do I know that I got there? Is it just sales? Is it just marketing? Is it just customer success? Is it everything all wrapped up into one mesh? That's just one example. So it's a 12-week program. We give the startups a 12-week program in which they go through a bunch of content, but not only content, but also very close mentoring by people who were startup founders, such as myself, but also in our ecosystem. People who've been founder CEOs, sat in the chair, know how hard it is to build a company, and really walk them through the early stages of a startup to cross that chasm.
Awesome. So who are some of the companies that you're involved with?
Yeah. Mm. So maybe it's worthwhile just explaining the framework that we work in.
Yeah.
So we do two cohorts every year. Prior to every cohort, we see 250 companies.
Wow.
Okay, top of the funnel, that's a lot. Okay. We help screen them or we screen them. And then we get to kind of a culmination
How do you screen them? Like, what are your.
So, what every VC would look at, like, how good is the team? How defensible is the technology? Is there a technology moat? Obviously, that it has a bearing of interest to Intel. Okay, this is where we're. I mean, this is not pro bono. This is not like for the greater good. Okay, it has a very specific goal. Like, how big is the company going to be? Like, is it going to succeed? Do we have conviction that this is going to be a great company? After the culmination of that selection process is what we call a selection day, We bring to the table between 15 to 20 startups. Then we have, we threw a day that had 160 evaluators this time around. Half of them are VC folks and half of them are Intel executives. We then, or these evaluators, external evaluators, make sure that we don't drink our own Kool-Aid, okay? That we fall in love in a company that we saw, you know, during the kind of the screening process, but it's not gonna qualify for one reason or another. The top 10 companies that finish that day are the one that get selected into our batch. So right now in Tel Aviv, we're running our ninth batch. Okay, so that means that we have like almost 80 companies in our portfolio. Okay, less of them are active because a bunch of them got sold. Some of them also wrapped up, like had to wind down like any other VC. But we know that our portfolio, okay, compared to who we didn't select, like the anti-portfolio, is performing much better. We look at ourselves like from that perspective, like any other VC, like we want to make sure that our companies raise more, do it from better VC, like from like top tier VCs, and do it faster. Okay. Some of the companies just literally graduated. We just had like a couple of lists here. Okay. Like top 50 most promising startups. Okay. Like one that comes to mind is Exodigo, a company that does kind of a mapping for underground. Quack, that does a modern version for MLOps, Bria AI, which is powering the infrastructure of generative AI for content creation. Just got mentioned by Satya Nadella, okay, as like the pillar for the strategy, for Microsoft's strategy in generative AI. So we have a bunch of high flying, I would say like high profile startups, and we're very fortunate to be working with these very talented founders.
So when you're looking at them, what would you say, what you personally think might be the most underrated characteristic when deciding who would be worthwhile to join the next batch?
Okay, that's a tricky question. And I'll tell you why.
I thought that was tricky.
Because it always reminds you, I always go to the, like, what does it take to be a great entrepreneur, okay? And for me, the number one basic quality is grit. It is damn hard. It is tough as nails to build a company, okay? And grit, it's funny because in Hebrew, it doesn't really translate well. Like there isn't like one word that describes it.
What do you think would be the best word in Hebrew?
I don't know. I don't know. What do you think is going to be the best?
I don't know. Maybe we just say grit.
Grit. Grit.
Grit. We're bringing
but,
it to Hebrew.
Yeah, but it's like, it's a combination between like extreme tenacity, like almost like, almost to the level of being stubborn, but still being open and coachable, okay, which is critical for us, by the way. Like, not all VCs would look at coachability, okay, as something that some VCs care about it, some don't, okay. Like for us, I mean, if you come here and you're going to undergo a 12-week program with us,
right?
We want to make sure that you're gonna listen. Otherwise. There's not a point, right? Like of working together. So I think a combination between like great coachability, and obviously like phenomenal market potential, okay, that we see that there is a big market for this thing, a defensible deep tech moat, okay, which plays into the thesis for us, okay. Again, like not all VCs like would look at the tech moat, but like if you're building in deep tech, which we are, by the way. The deeper, the better, okay? And like, we're kind of rare in the Israeli ecosystem in that manner, okay? But give it us, like, I mean, like, bring it on. Like robotics, like hardware, chips, semiconductors, you know, the longer the sales cycle.
Right,
I mean,
right. I like this
okay, I mean, like,
this, not just SaaS.
Not just SaaS, okay? That's not a pitch that you'd usually get, okay, like from an Israeli VC. Like also referred to like sometimes what we do is referred to as an accelerator program, okay, because like it really hands you a manual or a guide, okay, to how you're gonna get to that next fundable point. That's where we focus on, like how you're gonna get across that chasm, you're gonna nail your product market fit, okay, to make sure that you get to the point that you can raise your phenomenal Series A, raise your fantastic Series B, and hopefully like be strategically relevant to Intel to further engage down the line. Another maybe notable point is one of our alumni is Granulate. Granulate is a batch one, okay, like almost 5 years ago now. Worth mentioning that Intel Ignite is going to celebrate a 5-year anniversary in July.
Awesome. Yeah. Throwing a party?
We'll probably throw a party.
I just want to invite us. I saw your whiskey selection.
So. You saw the whiskey selection? You're like, I want to be invited to that party. No, yeah. I got you, Joel. I think it's a landmark, you know, it is a milestone, like to get to 5 years and to keep on producing like high quality, companies that we are fortunate to be working with. I think it's amazing. So Granulate, the company that was here at batch number one, Intel ended up acquiring for $650 million. Another recent success for Intel Ignite was DESI that got sold to NVIDIA.
Just now.
Yes, just now.
A month ago.
Another recent exit that we had, a company called SpeedDB that got sold to Redis. So, I mean, like, I could throw off and do humble brags, but...
Why not?
We have a great portfolio, and we're fortunate to be working with amazing founders. But it's definitely a two-way street. I mean, like, they need to be, as I said, like, coachable, okay? Like, mm-hmm. to want to come and say, I don't know everything. I need help, which, by the way, I think is... I think that the Israeli ecosystem is evolving, okay? Although we have growth companies and we've, you know, like you look at kind of, there are a bunch of unicorns here in Israel now and a companies that got to $100 million in ARR. But I think the maturity of the Israeli ecosystem, it's not only reflected in these companies, it's reflected in the fact that entrepreneurs that are, you know, not afraid to ask for help. Mm-hmm. Okay, it used to be that I know everything, I'm good at everything, just leave me alone. But honestly, again, building a company is tough as nails. It's yeah. not easy. You could use, or like even me, okay, that I'm looking at myself, like I had a good kind of lap around, a good first go around. I don't know everything. I need more help, okay? Like you need people to soundboard with, to jam with, you know? To kind of provoke your creativity, okay? And to challenge you, to tell you that you don't know everything and to like make you think twice or three times about everything, every move that you're taking in a good way for you to grow.
You said Israelis don't, or you implied that Israelis really, you know, not asking for help.
Yeah.
Isn't very Israeli.
Yeah.
Would you say that have changed in the tech industry in general? Or what is it about, do you think, Israelis that don't want to ask for help?
Yeah.
And how do you think that's actually changed when it comes to business and Israeli tech?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, with the maturity of Israeli companies, okay, like the fact that we see a lot more companies like growing out of Israel, okay, like getting to significant milestones and becoming public out of Israel as the HQ, I think there comes an understanding there is a lot of kind of knowledge, okay? There is a big knowledge base that got, you know, kind of solidified here in Israel, that you can now go to kind of a friend of a friend, a benefit of the Israeli ecosystem that it's tiny, okay, and everybody knows everybody. So, you know, within two hops, you could get to a person who's built or is building something that can help you. So I think we as Israelis have learned to ask for help, which I think is an amazing trait, because asking for help will help you build your company into like, one up, okay, than what you could have built without asking for help. And I think that the Israeli ecosystem as a whole like understands and recognizes the fact that mentors like have or add value as long as you pick the right ones, okay? And multinationals, they can add value as long as you pick the right ones. And I mean, there are all these bodies in the ecosystem that... it's also a funny word, ecosystem. What is that? You know, like it's a bunch of like pieces of the puzzle that do create something that is bigger. Okay. Like the whole is bigger than the mm-hmm. synergies, blah, 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 right? Stuff. But it's true. I mean, like what is happening in Israel is the fact that you have like more seasoned entrepreneurs, you know, that it's their second, third time. more seasoned VCs, okay? You see more and more VCs here. Not only folks that have built like their or started their VCs like in the early 2000s, but also like emerging fund managers. You have special purpose vehicles, okay? Like you've got micro funds, angel clubs. The Israel Innovation Authority is a phenomenal body that we have a close partnership with, okay? Like you've got all of these different tools, okay, for you to build a better, bigger, stronger company. And I think that's changed, okay? And like ergo, or like the Israeli entrepreneur, kind of, you know, just like over, like generalizing, has learned to say, okay, maybe I need to ask around before I decide that I know everything. And I think that's a good thing.
I think that sounds like a change in the Israeli culture.
Yeah.
Do you think it will trickle that outside of tech or outside of founders?
Ah, too big for me to answer. I don't know. You know, like don't want to go into current situation, et cetera. So I don't think, I think tech is driving, you know, Israel as a country. Mm-hmm. And I think that Israel as a country can learn a lot about the way tech has bootstrapped itself.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, into a dominant factor of the Israeli economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are definitely things that the country as a whole can learn and take away from what happened in that sector and kind of hopefully percolate to other sectors.
What do you think that we can learn?
It's a good question. What do I think that we can learn?
Yeah.
Being humble.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's not going to happen next.
Yeah. That's a tough one. Okay. Learning that we don't know everything. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like learning that we got a partner. Okay. And the way for growth is partnerships.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I specifically did a stint in New York, which I think as like in like as a founder CEO of my own company, spent 4 years there. It taught me a bunch. Okay. I'm spending a stint right now in a multinational, which is teaching me a bunch, mm-hmm. okay? I think that many, many people, okay, like in the regards of like my time in like overseas, many Israelis speak English, not many speak American.
Right.
Okay? And in order to succeed in a global environment, you also have to be very culturally adaptive, mm-hmm. okay? One story that I usually share, okay? So my biggest deal on my previous company that I founded, CEO'd, called Brain Total, I did it on the golf course, okay?
Which one, in Kisaria?
No. So in Boulder, Colorado,
okay,
on a Sunday morning, 11 a.m.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So I get to the golf course, and they won't let me in because I didn't have a colored shirt, a nice one like you do. And I didn't have the pants, and I didn't have the golf swagger, okay?
Right.
And I schlepped over to a Kohl's. That was the only thing that was open.
Uh-huh.
And I bragged about it, that I was kind of the Israeli, and like, you know, I figured it out, okay? Like, I kind of pulled things together. And I didn't know that it doesn't make me look endearing. It makes me look like an alien.
Correct.
Okay?
Right.
One thing that we do now in our program here at Intel Ignite is we take our founders golfing.
I was about to say, like, and I said this before, I'm seeing with business and going abroad, you're seeing a little bit more golf players because I live by the Kisaria. seeing more cigar smoking. There's things that are imported, I think, a little from the...
I don't know if, yeah, cigar smoking, like feels like, you know, if it's your thing or not. Like,
right. You know, no, I'm seeing more things that are imported culturally.
Yes.
That's the way business is done abroad. You see some more of that.
Yes. But I think that the point is that, I mean, like if you want to do, if like the way Americans do deal making is relationship.
Correct.
Okay. I mean, I was surprised that after 3 hours, we didn't talk what I perceived was business.
Right.
I thought, you know, like, well, they're going to ask me about the product and what the feature is.
Nope,
and
it's
the
relationship.
It's all relationship.
That's golf.
They want to make sure that they can spend 3 hours with you and relate.
Right.
And connect.
Right.
And in the last 5 minutes of the, you know, of the session.
It's like, oh, what do you do?
Yeah. No, it wasn't even that. It was like, okay, so Bob will follow up with you. And I'm like,
follow up on what?
What just happened? Did I close a deal?
Right.
And the answer is yes.
Right.
I mean, like, that's how you close a deal. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Israeli entrepreneurs, okay, like, it's very hard, okay, for you to understand that unless you...
Because they're very impatient. They want to get straight to it.
We do tachlis.
Right.
That's how we do business, okay? Listen, here are my watches, okay? This watch right. is better than that watch, okay? Which watch do you want?
I tell Israelis they need to have some business foreplay.
There you go. That's a good way of putting it. But honestly, I think what you want to see is trust, mm-hmm. okay? You want to feel that, you know, the person that you're having a conversation with is a real person, has built a real business, and you can trust that person. Mm-hmm. Because your American counterpart is going to put their good name and reputation on the line because they're going to walk you through right. their enterprise.
Right.
So can I trust you?
Do you think we'll see more golf culture here?
Maybe. I think, I definitely think that we're getting a lot more, that it's meshing well, okay? Like, uh-huh. I see a lot more Israelis, like, getting that acumen, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, understanding. It used to be, like, going into a room and trying to hard sell.
Yep.
Okay? But I think that we are definitely, that's one of the areas that I feel that we're seeing change in. You know, like, we're not only advocating for it, we're hopefully here at Intelligent, we also teach it.
Right. I was saying, I think a lot should have a golf course. Saying
that yeah.
Like for years.
Yeah.
But how do you keep it profitable? We'll see. We were saying, like, Israelis go in and they always try to hard sell.
Yeah.
Learning kind of the art of business, of having those
yeah.
conversations that aren't directly about business. And then, have you changed? Because you used to be a door-to-door salesperson.
Yeah.
On HOT, a cable provider.
Yeah.
I have tremendous respect for salespeople.
Yeah.
How do you go from you being a salesperson to now saying, take it slow, don't be so direct.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't just like throw up yeah. your sales pitch on people.
Yeah.
How did that transition happen to you? Maybe you can take us back into your sales life.
Yeah. So that was first job, I think, after the Army, my Army service. And my, I had two reasons for picking up that gig. One is I had a girlfriend who lived in Naria, which is like an hour and a half drive from Tel Aviv. And I needed like
three... So don't know, it's just near Lebanon.
Yeah, near Lebanon. Yeah, and I needed... the job had like a car, all expenses paid.
Got it.
So I'm like, oh, okay, I want that. And the second thing is I wanted to learn from my SATs. And the hours, okay, where you had to work, started at 12 noon, okay?
Right.
So I'm like, oh, great. I can study, okay, like in the mornings and then like actually work at night. So this was my, here's the rationale for why I took that job, okay?
Not that, like, that's normal rationale for a young 20-year-old son.
Yeah, yeah.
There's but good
like,
reasons.
Yes, but it's not like I was like, oh, I want to...
Sell.
Sell, okay?
You just found your first way to pay the bills.
And there you go.
Worked with your lifestyle.
There you go. But the job, I think, taught me a lot. I mean, like, first of all, I think that physically, maybe even mentally, like, that was maybe the hardest job, aside from being a founder CEO, that I ever did. Because it meant, okay, so HOT is not a well, let's say, I'll put it, like, mildly, not a well-loved brand. Okay, uh-huh. a cable company.
Generally speaking.
Generally speaking, you have people hate cable companies, okay?
That's like, why they have to call themselves HOT.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Okay, it's not like if I go to, like, you know, Comcast. And do you like Comcast? We're like, right. Probably not, okay? So, like going door-to-door and then having to, without, like, any prior... Okay, like, it's not like I called people up and told them I'm coming over to meet you. I knocked on your door and I had to sell you like cable TV, like a phone and an internet, okay? That was very humbling.
Yeah.
I got my
a lot of rejections,
first sure. piece of humble pie was there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
And any good stories someone telling you?
Some phenomenal stories. By the way, the thing that kept me motivated was actually a thing that like my first like team leader there said. It was like, we get 50 calls every day into the customer service like hotline saying, and the 51st call is a call, like is a person that just says, hi, can you please connect me to the service? And he was like, you need to knock on 51 doors Okay. And the 51st is just the same waiting for you to happen.
Mm-hmm. Like numbers it. Game.
Yeah. It's a numbers game. It's a numbers game. By the way, first lesson ever.
By the way, that's so Israeli with their sales. I almost switch banks because they keep calling and selling me stuff.
There all you right? go.
So like, I don't put my money with you so you can spam me all day.
There
I
you go.
You don't need a loan. You know that because you know how much is in the bank.
There you go. So I think that's the first thing that I ever learned. Okay. Is that in order to be in sales, I mean, like, it's a numbers game. You got to be tenacious. I mean, like, you got to work through the nose and just, like form, like, you know, get that thick skin on you.
I used to sell life insurance and annuities in Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
And I just got, like, a cold list of bullshit leads that I would dial. It was very humbling. Mm-hmm. I'd go out to their house and I schedule a meeting and then they wouldn't show or I know they're home but they won't answer. It's yeah. crazy stuff. But one of my sales coaches, he gave me this little book, pamphlet book, very short.
Yeah.
I think it was called Go For No. And Go For No. And the whole thing was that like you dial until you get, it's not about the yes. It's
yeah.
you dial until you get whatever, 100 no's.
Yes.
And you're done.
Yes.
If you got a yes, that doesn't count as a no. So it's like, because if you're always going for the yes, you're disappointed.
Yeah, yeah,
Your
yeah.
goal is to sit down and connect with X amount of people
yeah.
on the phone
yeah.
who tell you to go screw yourself.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. Literally. Yeah.
And, now and then it's like, yeah, another one towards my goal. And
yeah,
you flipped
yeah.
it and yeah. kind of, you gamify the rejection.
That's.
And now I'm just used, like, rejection doesn't slip into a flaw.
Yeah.
Rejection doesn't slow me down.
But I think that's a phenomenal character for an entrepreneur. Okay. Right. Like that's what you want to learn. Okay.
Right.
That most of the time you'll get the no.
Right.
That like that's baked, built in to building a business.
Right. Right.
Okay. Most of the people won't believe you, won't fund you, mm-hmm. won't give you their money. That's just statistics.
Right.
That's just reality. And I think that's a tremendous, it's not that I planned to learn that, but I think like I got that out of that job. And I think I literally still remember my first sale ever. Okay. Like I just didn't believe that, but like I was, you know, knocking through houses, by the way, in Ramle, Bat Yam, Lod. Okay. Like places in Israel that I didn't have the good fortune in walking into up until that point. And you also get to connect with wonderful people, like the real Israel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Melech Haaretz, not just like everybody that homogeneous to you.
I know,
okay?
Right? Yeah.
And there's no
You other... left the bubble.
Yeah, exactly. There's no other way for you to win a deal than to connect with that person.
Right.
You have to. And you have to figure out what's going to be connecting me, Alon Leibovich, from Blich High School, which is known for forecasting an election, okay, like uh-huh. result in Israel, and producing like pilots, etc., with a person that is, you know, socioeconomical, like in, like kind of not in the top like percentile. How do you create that connection? Mm-hmm. And that was amazing. I mean, to me, like that was the magic that happened, like rewired my brain. Okay. How do you go and really build a relationship? Yes, of course. You know, I mean, like there was like a financial benefit there. I wanted to make the sale. Okay. But it taught me that I can talk, relate, speak to like a wide variety of people. And that was, I think I got a lot from that.
Probably one of the hardest part in sales and building a business is actually the psychology that goes around it, and there's a mindset and understanding how the people you're selling to, whether you're selling cable,
yeah,
or if you're selling your tech product,
yeah,
or if you're selling yourself, which we're always doing,
always.
What do you think of the psychology behind it? Right, you were telling me earlier you have a behavioral psychology background.
Yeah,
what advice would you give to those, let's say, from a psychology perspective, they may not be aware of because they didn't study it like you have?
Yeah. So phenomenal question. I think there's a psychological, I think everybody knows that there is a psychological component, okay, to everything that we do. But I definitely think that people underestimate like how big these kind of underpinnings are. So, and I'll elaborate. So did my bachelor's in business and psychology in Ben Gurion University. And then I'm like, okay, like everybody's doing a master's, like an MBA. I knew I wanted to differentiate. So I went and I did psychology in the Technion. I'm an organizational psychologist, or at least I thought that was the combination between like business and psychology. I quickly understood that like I'm not gonna be a fabulous organizational psychologist. So
what made you know that?
I didn't like being the consultant. I wanted that if I...
Didn't you work at McCann?
Yes. Yes, I did.
You're making a lot of sense.
Nah, yeah, I know. You know, you think that... It's funny, but because in hindsight, everything is 2020. But like, but honestly, like it's all coming together once you have... The insight happens one day, but it's like I became an overnight success.
Right, right,
it took
right,
me 20 years right. to become an overnight success, right? Yep. So that's kind of the, you know, there are kind of tectonic shifts in your personality, okay? Uh-huh. Stuff that you collect from like being a salesperson yeah. and like learning, like studying psychology and working as a consultant, okay? Like to a point where you understand mostly what you don't want to do, okay? Like you eliminate stuff. At least this is how I got to my career path, okay? That seems planned or unplanned or whatever. But it's mostly what you don't want to do that leads you to what you do want to do. So I think I went to study psychology because it gave me an understanding of human behavior. Why do people behave the way they do? And I think one of the most fascinating, or what I saw that was fascinating in McCann was that consumer psychology is an amazing phenomena. It means that a whole segment of population really does feel the same way in a certain point in time, okay? Companies such as Procter & Gamble, Unilever, like consumer packaged goods, like behemoths, understand to the T, how does a mom feel? There are many moms in the world.
Right.
Many.
Right.
Okay. It is very, very hard to understand how moms feel. And that right. fascinated me.
Right. Interesting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Or dads, or, you know, like, okay, so I'm gonna... I see a lot of parallels, for instance, right now with companies who sell to developers. Sorry for like going,
no, dude,
going sideways here.
Good conversation.
But kind of the companies that sell to developers, you know, like I meet many entrepreneurs here and they say, I am selling to, what is your go-to-market? I'm selling B2D. Like, what is B2D? Like before this, I've never heard
right.
of a go-to-market business to developers. I'm like, do you think that Procter & Gamble calls their go-to-market B2M,
right.
business to moms.
Right.
No, dude, you're doing B2C.
Right.
You're selling to a consumer. The fact that you have identified your subsegment, okay, just like Procter & Gamble did with moms, and your subsegment's name is developers, that's fabulous. But don't, like, reinvent the wheel here, okay? There's way to do B2C marketing, okay? The fact that you're doing it in the context of developers shouldn't change the fact that your underpinnings of the business are business to consumer. Now, what is it that makes developers tick? That's another different question.
But isn't that why they're calling it B2D then?
No.
Are they doing it just to make them feel like cool, special, I'm in a special niche?
That's my hypothesis, yeah, that's okay?
Every time I hear a new KPI not KPI.
Acronym.
An acronym yeah. Or you know these buzzwords yeah. people are using,
yeah.
and that's how I know that person doesn't think for themselves if they are.
My favorite acronym is TLA. You know what it is?
A three-letter acronym.
There you go. So I think that you shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel, okay? And I don't think that unless you bring like a different type of background. I mean, I don't know of people who went from psychology like and marketing into deep tech. Like I'm the only one that I know of, okay? So I feel that this is a different perspective, okay? Like an orthogonal like perspective into like how to build a deep tech business because I saw how consumer businesses are being built and I understand like what it feels like. So that's about psychology in business, just one. But I do want to talk about psychology in an entrepreneur's life, okay? So that, the fact that it's hard to build a business, I think everybody recognizes, okay? But aside from the fact that everybody...
By the way, I wouldn't say that's true.
What?
I would say most people that have never built a business, they assume...
It's easy. It's
like, you said, 20 year overnight success, overnight success.
Yeah. Yeah.
No idea. When,
yeah.
When you're watching Netflix, I'm working.
You know? Yeah. Oh, for sure. So the psychology component or the psychological component or mental health and well-being in an entrepreneur's life is critical. I felt it on my back, okay? What it feels like to have anxiety attacks and like stress, okay? Like stress to the point where you feel it in your chest, okay? You have chest pains, mm-hmm. okay? And I then understood that something is wrong with me. And I had like a support circle, which in that case was my wife, who told me, okay, buddy,
right.
Time to see a therapist because you're not well.
Right.
Okay. There's too much stress on you and you need help. Okay. Just like working through that stress and building your resilience. So I did. And I went to see a therapist.
Wait, when was this?
Yeah. That's around brand total.
Okay.
We didn't talk about that.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get there. But the 360, like kind of angle that you need to look at entrepreneurship, it's not only building your business, okay? It's also building your resilience as a person in order for you to cope with building your business,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Well, what were you using to, other than therapy, because your wife said so?
Yeah.
What were you doing to cope with stress?
Working out.
Yeah, I find that to be the best.
Stress is physiological, mm-hmm. okay? It accrues in your body.
Right.
Physically.
Right.
Okay. The fact that you feel chest pains or like you can't sleep at night.
Right.
Like that's the physiological phenomena in your body, okay, that you have to have an outlet for. One of the best outlets is working out.
I remember reading that during the Yom Kippur War, Golda Meir would get on her hands and knees and scrub the floor.
Scrub the floor.
Stress, you know?
Nice.
Yeah. Thing, I know when I'm stressed, I need to get everything. I need everything around me to be clean.
Yeah.
And then it relieves you then. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
You mentioned this company Brand Total.
Right? Yeah.
So you founded it. And so what happened there? And that's what you were doing before you joined Intel Ignite.
Yes, correct. So Brand Total came out of a pain that I felt working at McCann.
Uh-huh. Do you want to talk about McCann? Is that relevant?
Yeah, for sure. Just like in a quick, so did strategy there for all of these big brands, Honda, Unilever, IKEA, etc. Felt a pain, couldn't understand what my competition is doing on social media. Like tried to figure that out. Couldn't.
Right.
So dug deeper into it and basically ended up building kind of Nielsen, you know, Nielsen, the rating company?
Yep.
So Nielsen for social media, okay, a measurement, benchmarking and measurement platform for paid social media.
For paid advertising.
Paid advertising, okay.
All platforms?
All platforms. Or many of, all the relevant ones, okay. All
the top five.
Yeah. Built a business, raised $25 million in venture capital, scaled the business to a $10 million ARR run rate, awesome. Had like big logos like L'Oreal, Verizon, Mercedes, Coke, Pepsi, Kimberly Clark, J&J, like as customers.
Ended up practice that? You said that fast.
had to say it a couple of times now. But really big brands. And the pain that I felt like is an actual, like, I mean, I know that pain was a real pain. That's what enabled us to get like all of this great traction and ended up getting sued by Facebook.
Why?
The official like claim was a breach of their terms and conditions. That was the basic, claim. So what we did at Brand Total, we created a consumer panel. We paid people money for their data and we packaged that money, aggregated it, et cetera.
You packaged that data?
That data, sorry. Apologies. And sold it to all of these big brands. So at the end of the day, spent kind of the long and short of it, spent 2 years litigating against them because we felt we were definitely on the right. Ended up winning. For 2 years, we were the only company in the world that was able to collect data from Facebook by a federal judge's decree.
Wow.
Spoke to a bunch of people that I'm not supposed to talk to as an entrepreneur, okay, like legislators, etc. Even after the 2 years that we won, we saw that at the end of the day, litigation is not a fair game.
Nope. Never.
Okay.
They want to run into the, they were used to run into the ground.
The party that has more money is more inclined to win.
Yep.
Startup versus like
that. Yeah.
Okay.
Behemoth.
Yes. Kind of. So we ended up winding down the business. It's like selling off the IP.
Just because of the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Even though they favored your...
Woke up
one... How much did it cost you?
A lot.
Can you say?
Millions. Ended up...
Facebook got what they wanted.
Yes.
At the end of the day, even if they thought that you were right, they were just trying to take you...
You
take
you wake up one day and you realize that 80, 90% of your day is litigation.
Right.
And that sucks. That's not what you want to be doing as an
right.
entrepreneur.
Right.
Growth person. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So, took all of these learnings, encapsulated them, and trying to talk about them, like with the entrepreneurs that go through Intel Ignite, to understand what hardships can come into, okay, uh-huh. like from building a business. And that also encapsulates, I mean, like after something like that happens to you, the stress levels go through the roof.
Right.
Okay. That is very, very stressful to undergo a lawsuit.
Right.
Okay.
So against Meta, against Facebook.
So in order to build resilience, like you have to adopt like things, okay, to make you work better, okay, or keep you sane rather, and still operate. Okay. So working out. I was working out like a crazy, like okay.
Shows.
Yeah. Mindfulness, okay, like meditation, okay?
Uh-huh.
Like breathing, okay? Like all mm-hmm. of these things.
Do you pray?
I don't pray. No, I don't. I wonder whether religion or like being like religious about something, by the way, doesn't really.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like I believe it could help. I see that as, I don't know if alternate, but like additive to meditation, mm-hmm. okay?
Yeah, totally.
Rather than...
I like how you said that, by the way.
Yeah.
People see them as like, do you pray or meditate? I agree. It's an,
yeah.
It's an additive. Yeah. Many people meditate during prayer even.
Yeah. So couldn't probably replace working out.
No. Nothing replaces work.
Yeah.
Working out is it's really... Burns it off.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So right now at Intel Ignite, we have a stress management workshop with a clinical psychologist that specializes in entrepreneurs.
What does that mean? Like, I know what that means, but like, what does that entail? What does that look like?
So you are going to, first thing, awareness. You are going to be stressed. It's not a question of whether will you be stressed or not.
Right.
You are going to be stressed, even if you don't get
sued. By the way, hopefully
sued.
You should be, because if you're not stressed, you're not challenging yourself.
I was, like...
You're not going to grow.
Back in the day, 2016, I raised a $2 million seed. Now mm-hmm. it's barely called a pre-seed, okay?
It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah, okay.
Now you need like $5 million.
There you go. So, and I'm like, oh my God, people gave me a bunch of money. Like, I am responsible for that money now, okay? Like, you get stressed immediately.
Right.
Okay? I mean, like, I am now the custodian of a lot of money.
Right.
Okay. Like, it's not like you're, nobody has ever entrusted with that amount of money with me ever before. And that is stressful for a person. Okay. Any person. Mm-hmm. As the company grows, we grew to like 50 something employees. I don't remember. You pay people salaries.
Right.
You're responsible for them feeding their families and children.
Right.
Okay. You have a bunch of big customers. They rely on you.
Right.
Okay. So barring like crazy stuff, okay, that might happen to you, it's still a very stressful journey.
Right.
Okay. So you're going to be stressed. Now, how do you cope with that? Okay. So we walk them through the techniques of like, first of all, accepting the fact that you will be stressed.
Right.
If we've done that, we've done plenty. Okay.
Right.
And second, like what are the most common practices that you could, okay, like apply, like when that stress hits, okay? We have...
What are those common things, would you say?
So the...
Like, is it proactive work? Like every day, hey, before as your stress escalates, which it will, every morning working, I mean, things up, go for a walk, meditate, pray.
Of the most common, like you can talk to every entrepreneur that's been here in the program, like, and my most common question is like, did you work out today?
Right. But your most common question that you ask them?
Yeah, that I ask them.
Uh-huh. Did you gym here?
Yeah. There's a gym here at
building.
Yeah, in the building. Okay. But like most of them have offices, et cetera. It's not hard to find a gym in Israel. Right. Okay. Like, go freaking do something outside. Yeah, run, yeah. Swim, do whatever. Do your jazz. Doesn't matter. Okay. Right. But work out.
Right.
Okay. The second thing is like mindfulness and meditation. Okay. We have yoga practice here. Okay. Like also like kind of combines the two. Mm-hmm. And the third thing is like learn how to breathe properly. Okay. Like goes back to my behavioral psychology, like background. Most of the time your brain can't figure out that your brain tells you that you're stressed. You have to get your body to tell your brain
that you're not.
Okay. So that's called CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. If you really learn how to master your breathing, you can really relax.
Do you want to do a breathing exercise with us? How should we do it?
Yeah. You want to do a breathing exercise?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm all like clogged up. So like, I mean, I'm not sure.
Anyone needs it now.
These are like three basic things that you like. I think, first of all, I think everybody needs therapy. Okay. Mm-hmm. CEOs have to get therapy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think it's great, like just all around.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Two other things that I mentioned that I think are helping to create like resilience and like support an entrepreneur's kind of ecosystem. We have a session here called co-founder therapy, like with kind of like a marriage counsel. Okay. Like basically helping better communication between you and your co-founder.
Yeah. That's probably super important.
Okay.
I see that better than the other therapy, probably. Communication is very, it's harder than it sounds.
It's really hard, okay? And more often than not, in an overestimation of what people anticipate and think, we don't read each other's minds.
Right.
Okay? And you have to say and speak things out. And if you don't do it or like put a dedicated slot of doing it, you will end up trying to like guess what your co-founder has in mind, and guess what?
You're wrong.
With time, okay, you guys,
uh-huh,
okay, we just grow further and further apart.
This is how many marriages fall apart.
Yes.
Well, lack of communication, misassumptions.
For sure. And if you look at the top, you know, reasons for why startups fail,
uh-huh,
okay, you'll find like co-founders like feud, I think, topping that list.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The third thing that we have a panel called the co-founder spouse, led by my wife. And like three other spouses, like the
interesting.
This
is fascinating. That like that, just the sound of it.
Yeah. So the wife of Zohar Alon, the wife of Guy Nitzan, and the husband of Einat Gez. Mm-hmm. And they talk about how shitty it is to be married to a founder CEO, because it is shitty. Uh-huh. Okay,
it's not fun. Misery loves company. Yeah, we're in our club.
but I mean. Like,
but they need that support.
They,
even now, since October 7th, here a lot of things, you know, we're supporting our soldiers. A lot of things we forget is a lot of wives and moms are home alone with the children.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
They need their own support system, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, first of all, understand that the home front for like a founder CEO or for an entrepreneur is something that, if you manage it right, okay, like will help you and will help you grow. If you manage it wrong, you will have to fight another front.
Right. I like how you said that.
Okay.
Right.
Like, right. You know, it's not only...
It can be used for you or against you.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. It's not like, you know, you're worried and bothered about like getting customers and getting funding and building a team, and all of a sudden your wife wants to divorce you.
Right.
I mean, how are you going to build a business?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. But if you like turn that over like on its head and you really work with your like spouse... Okay, to just say like, honey, this is like, we're doing this. I'm doing this for us. Okay. It's not like every spouse is gonna, it's not like it goes down easy. Okay. But if your spouse already if you're already a founder CEO, your spouse already kind of knows what she got when she married this, okay? Okay.
I'm not sure about that
yet. So, more often than not. You know, yeah, I agree. But that is another like area in your life that you need to be managing, okay, as a founder.
What advice would you give to a founder's spouse?
So first of all, open and honest communication with your spouse. I mean, like, say what are the bare minimums that you need your founder CEO of a husband or founder CEO of a wife, okay, to uphold so you don't get pissed at them.
Right.
Okay. I don't care what you do, but you don't fly, I don't know, like to 2 weeks and or you're home by 6 and I'm gonna have you jump on calls back again at 8.
Right.
Okay, I don't care. Okay? Right. But have these basic rules of engagement, okay, with your spouse so they don't get pissed at you.
Right.
Okay? And another rule that I had with my wife is like, when you're home, you're present.
Right.
Okay.
So you never go home.
Okay. Because you're never home.
Right.
Okay. So I remember I persuaded my wife to move to New York. She didn't want to at the onset of when we started the business. And one of the things that I told her is like, I'm going to be much more at home because like, I'm not going to be, you know, like on a plane all the time. And right. When 6 p.m. like happens, like I'm here at home with the kids. So I remember like one time where I come here, I go to the living room and I sit down with the kids. And I think my like, then he was like 2-year-old, like broke something or like, yeah, or almost like opened his head from like jumping and doing some stupid like, okay, like boy stuff. And she was like, you know, she comes up to me and said, and goes like this, okay? And she's like, I don't know where you are, but you're not at home.
Wow.
Okay? And I'm like, oh, shit. Right. I'm probably, like, she's probably right. And from that point onwards, we decided that 6 to 8, okay, is a time where I'm not taking any calls. I'm not doing any meetings. Okay, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Okay, like Eastern time.
Yeah.
Okay? I can go back on the phone later. Okay? My job is to walk the dog. Okay? Like right. In 8 p.m., I can, you know, talk to the West Coast. I can do whatever I want. But 6 to 8, that's sacred.
Right.
Okay? So all of these kind of just alignment of expectations with your spouse will help you hopefully like be happier, like not get a divorce and build a successful business.
So the holistic approach when it comes to startups, obviously caring about your spouse and your house, your home life, is imperative to be healthy in business. So, and you talked a lot about here at Intel Ignite, you have this holistic approach where making sure or there's exercises incorporated, that therapy is there for you if you think it's necessary, improving proactively communication between co-founders and all that. Would you think there are any, what are the unique holistic approaches beyond that Intel Ignite and in for business that people should incorporate into their lifestyle if they're going to be founder of a deep tech company?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, like for us to even have these segments like about or these pieces of the program about the fact that mentorship is critical, the fact that looking at the home front is critical, like communicating with your co-founders is critical, being culturally aware is critical, the fact that product market fit is a thing and you can quantify it is critical. Just like what I think that what kind of differentiates or does this program very unique, we really, it's all entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. Like everybody in this team have had an entrepreneurial experience. So we talk, you know, we walk that talk. We have walked that talk. We have been in your shoes.
We've walked that talk.
Okay, like exactly. We've sat in your seat. We know what it feels like. And we also know, or we have cracked the code, I want to say, on the fact that this knowledge can be encapsulated, institutionalized, and fed into, if you're willing to listen and open up, okay, which is like just a prerequisite for joining a program like this, you can really learn about or cut corners, okay, in building your successful business faster, better, stronger.
Awesome. So if someone's a deep tech founder and they wanted to get involved in Intel Ignite, how do they do that?
So we've got two vehicles here at Intel Ignite. So one is that program that I spoke about. You have to have, first of all, like be relevant in
What's the name of the program?
Intel Ignite program.
Okay.
I'll say
good name.
Yeah.
Very original.
I'll say the other one in just a second. So you not only have to be in deep tech, but you also have to have raised over $1 million in funding
before
applying to the program.
Friends and family encountered have to be
anything.
More
show us that you've been able to raise $1 million
that someone else believed in you. Enough,
yes.
Right.
Okay. So that's the 12-week program that I talked about. Okay, and then. So that's one thing. And the other thing that we have here in our amazing space that you see here all around you is what we call Intel Ignite's pre-seed community. It's not a program, it's a community. So the basically here, because we've seen so many great entrepreneurs that come to us before they've either raised like $1 million or this person knows that they are a founder. Like, they identify as like, hello, I am a founder CEO building something in cloud, whatever. Right. Okay. But I mean, like every company starts from one person. Instead of sitting in like a random coffee shop on a wooden chair and paying 8 shekels for an espresso to sit 16 hours, if you get admitted to the community, we give you a space here for 6 months. We have office hours with people who help you do product ideation, your first budget. For the pre-seed, we connect you with VCs. We have a special relationship with the Israeli Innovation Authority to help you get a grant.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay, for working on your first start on your idea. So, if you're earlier than like for the program, for the flagship program, 12-week program, come talk to us. And how do you get a hold of us? Like, add me on LinkedIn, reach out to anybody.
That's my next question.
Yeah.
Stay in touch with you.
Add me on LinkedIn, add any of our staff, like staff members at LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn is a very busy inbox, but I try to answer everything that I get in, like every inbound, but please like reach out. Like we're happy to hear from you if you're building in deep tech.
Awesome. So they can message you or on Intel Ignite's website.
Yeah.
And you'll send us all the socials and we'll put everything below so you guys can link on. Thank you for hosting me in your beautiful offices here in the Triangle Tower at Azrieli.
Thank you for having me.
Hospitality, and I love what you're doing for ecosystem. Keep the good work. Thank you, Lon.
Thank you.